Some would say socialist feminism is an artifact. Others would say that it has only evolved as it always has. If it flowered in the 70s, it's flourishing today. The Socialist Feminist Project is a contemporary reader in theory and politics. It's intended to show socialist feminism's strengths and resources as an ongoing project. Nancy Holmstrom is professor of philosophy at Rutgers University and editor of the Socialist Feminist Project. She joins me today. Hi, Nancy. Welcome to Vancouver's Co-op Radio.
Thank you very much.
So maybe you could begin by helping us transcend the label of socialist feminism by explaining what it really is.
Okay. I just want to mention that there's a dedication in the book which says to all the women and men engaged in socialist feminist struggles by that name or another. What I argue is that you can use the word socialist feminism in a fairly narrow way in which it has a particularly precise meaning about which came out of the 70s theorizing. It's a theory which is kind of in between radical feminism and Marxism, and it's about understanding women's subordination in terms of capitalism and patriarchy. That's a specific meaning that I'm not using it in this book. Socialist feminism, as I'm using it, is a broad concept which sometimes is called Marxism, sometimes called womanism, sometimes called materialist feminism, various different names for theories which have tried to understand women's oppression in capitalism in some kind of synthetic way involving both class and gender and race, ethnicity, sexuality, and some kind of theoretical, synthetic, coherent examination of how these all come together. And there may be different theories about how they come together, and some people would prioritize one over the other, some people would not prioritize any, but in any case, it's not just a list, it's some kind of synthetic, coherent pulling together all those elements. Mm.
So the label itself can be broken down into two distinctive words, socialism on the one hand and feminism on the other. Where do we find the roots that mold these two bodies together?
I'm not sure just what you mean. I define feminism in my classes when I teach this in a very broad way. I ask the students, do you consider yourself feminist? And if so, what do you mean by it? And a lot of students do not consider themselves feminists, but it turns out that they support equal pay for equal work, equal opportunity for women, etc. And I tell just about all of them that they are feminists because that's what feminism means. It could be liberal feminism, it could be radical feminism, socialism, etc. That's all it means. It takes different forms. And then put socialist in front of it. It's a particular understanding and approach to the roots of women's subordination in this society and the way to go forward out of it, and that is that a woman's oppression is very much connected to her class, also her ethnicity and so forth. So even white middle and upper class women here in this society have some degree of discrimination, oppression, and so forth by virtue of their being women, but obviously it's totally different and much attenuated from that women who are working class or poor, who are black rather than white, et cetera, et cetera. If you want me to tell you what I mean by socialism, I mean the...
Well, I was wondering about the influence of Mary Wollstonecraft and Marx and Engels, those being trajectories for strong strains of thought.
Well, Mary Wollstonecraft was the earliest liberal feminist, and she just had a particularly intriguing idea that not only that women should be equal in society, but she had, she would call it a utopian vision. She called it the wild wish that the whole sex distinction would be confounded, that gender just would disappear. I mean, people would still be males or females, but that any social implications that followed from that would disappear. Individuals make their own course, their own personality, etc. And that's still a radical idea which I'm very partial to myself. So that's an influence of a liberal feminist. She was more radical than most of today's liberal feminists. Now, Marx and Engels agreed with Wollstonecraft, although I don't know if they ever read her, that gender, the social difference between men and women, was socially constructed, that there was nothing more than biology which really differentiated men and women inevitably. But gender, that is, men and women, masculinity, social roles, etc., is formed differently in different societies, and even in different social groups, classes within the society, gender expectations. So it's very interesting to discover that stereotyped views we have about women are not found particularly in the same way at all among black working class men and women.
So traditionally and historically and theoretically, Marx and Engels focused on the inherent exploitation and the relation between wage labor and capital. And how did women fit or not fit into this picture?
Well, they certainly fit in as women workers, that is, wage workers. Women tend to be super exploited. They tend to be just taken advantage of more by capitalists. And then in the home, something Marx didn't pay much attention to, whether you'd call them exploited or oppressed, they do double duty and so forth in their families. I mean, Marx and Engels did talk about in the family, women are the proletarian and men are the bourgeoisie. They said that sometimes, but they had a somewhat romanticized view, I think, about the working class family as more, you know, as that this existed less. And it might exist less, but it still exists. Women's oppression fits into Marx and Engels' analysis, but I think you have to go further to understand the non-work-related, capitalist-related, more subjective, non-economic forms of oppression to get a fuller picture. Mm-hmm.
And I guess a lot of that characterized what was happening in the 70s with the flourishing of women's literature and movement. And I'm wondering if you could trace how it's evolved from the 70s, just a brief sketch of how it's evolved from the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s, just the different forms that it may have taken on.
It being a women's movement or the socialist feminist movement?
Socialist feminism.
Well, that's really interesting. I think socialist feminism as a distinct theory from Marxism kind of declined for a variety of reasons. One is because of the rise of the theories of postmodernism, which were just very destabilizing and unsettling and, you know, extremely academic. Another reason was internal problems, I think, to the theory. If they say that we have to leave Marxism because you need a distinct system called patriarchy to take account of women's oppression along with capitalism, then what do you say about racism? If we need another distinct system, now we've got three instead of two, and we should call it socialist, anti-racist feminism, and then there's also heterosexism. Do we need another distinct system? It gets a little confusing. Either we start multiplying systems with no clarity as to the end, or we have to kind of go back to some kind of unified theory which does justice to the varieties of forms of oppression and how they're integrated. Mm. Anyway, so I think there were internal theoretical problems. But the other big reason is that social movements have been on the decline, sadly. The movements of women's liberation, the civil rights movement, and so forth, all of these, to the theorizing, the relationship was crucial. So with the decline of the movement, you have some decline in the theorizing. And the women who made that kind of theoretical and political breakthrough also got into policy positions to try to influence, you know, real practical change. They moved into motherhood and middle age and so forth. So we need a new stimulating generation. However, I think the empirical work has been going on, maybe not under that name, but all kinds of work now in academia and also out of it, just as a matter of course, brings in gender, if they're talking about class, brings in race and class, actually I think more often race than class, in their theorizing when they're talking about women. It's just no longer acceptable to make the kind of generalizations that women liberationists did in the 60s and 70s. Just sisterhood is powerful, unqualified, you know, or women are oppressed in the home. Well, some women don't have the luxury of just being in the home, you know. So I think there's a much greater sensitivity to the varieties of differences among women, sometimes to a fault, just differences. But I think there's also understand that women do have things in common, and but there are also these varieties of differences. And the articles that I've collected here just show the resources of this kind of analysis, whether it's dealing with prisons and Angela Davis, dealing with sexuality, as Dorothy Allison addresses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just in all the different domains of thought, you can see the intersection of race and class.
Yes,
and sex.
It's a very thorough work, the Socialist Feminist Project. There's a lot, there's a wealth of analysis in there. And I'm wondering how, well, today's anti-corporate globalization and peace movements have taken off in unprecedented scales. And how do you think the timing of all this impacts the potential for socialist feminism as an ongoing long-term project?
I think it's actually shows that socialist feminist analysis is more necessary than ever. I read something fairly recently which showed that the single worst problem facing women worldwide is extreme poverty. I mean, it's actually got a number in the World Health Organization list of problems. Extreme poverty, and the globalization has caused, you know, a greater inequality between rich and poor throughout the globe, and women are more clustered on the bottom. Tema Kaplan, the historian, is in my book reporting on the disappearing fathers of global capitalism, a family pattern, a fatherless family pattern that used to exist mostly among poor people is now started to extend to more and more people. So I think that it's just impossible to ignore the realities of class in thinking about women. So I think that the anti-globalization movement really needs to bring, you know, feminist analyses to bear, and I think they have to some extent, but more needs to be done. I recently heard Sheila Robotham speak, the brilliant socialist feminist historian from Britain, and she was talking about those kind of global women's movements and how they intersected with anti-globalization struggles.
Well, thank you very much, Nancy. Thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you so much, and good luck to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Okay, thank you. I've been speaking to Nancy Holmstrom. Nancy is editor of the Socialist Feminist Project, published by Monthly Review Press. You can order a copy on their website, monthlyreview.org.